this version, I'll just go by section. Section A is remarkably different and lays out a more honed, finely tuned educational reform plan for the state of Missouri. It tells the full story of Missouri's education initiatives through the Missouri School Improvement Program over the last 20 years. It really sets the stage for what our experiences have been through the different cycles of the Missouri School Improvement Program, what we've learned, gives the foundation for really where we are in Missouri. So basically we're telling, we feel like we've done a good job of telling the real story of Missouri to set up what the foundation is for future educational reform initiatives within the state. Then we get into the different sections. Section B is relatively similar to what it was in the first application. Section B looks at addresses adoption of the Common Core standards and assessment, development, and model curriculum to address those Common Core standards. Section C, difference from the first application, we honed it to deal directly with the comprehensive data system, the P20 data system within the state, getting data training, data analysis training to school districts and teachers, and providing assessment data in a much more timely fashion so that instruction can be updated in more timely fashion for teachers, so using state assessment data. Section D, basically in this round, differs from the first round in that this round we really just look at it as a plan to address the thorny issues within Section D, teaching standards for teachers and educational leaders, how to measure the effect of teachers and educational leaders within the state, what that would look like, how we would update our evaluation of teachers and leaders, models around compensation, those sorts of pieces, and then the preparation programs, updating preparation programs to reflect the updated standards, the measures of teacher effect, and the evaluation system. So D really is just a fully fleshed out plan for how would we deal with these thorny issues. Section D in the actual application asks states to talk about tenure laws, pay for performance, using student data to evaluate teachers, which are all pieces that we haven't really addressed at a state level. So we're basically looking at, here's a plan to really address all those issues with stakeholders, teacher involvement, legislative involvement, all the folks that have a stake in education will work through a plan. It's basically fleshed out the plan, how to deal with those issues and bring them up to the table for discussion in the state. Section E addresses very simply the turnaround models required in the application, gives the data concerning the lowest 5% of our school buildings within the state, our turnaround plans that are in effect for those school buildings, and what our future plans are around turnaround, and then also how we're looking at a braided system of support and bringing together Department of Mental Health, Social Services, the juvenile system, and other agencies and local groups to help in those schools that are struggling, to provide a braided system of support. Section E reviews our charter school policies and procedures and funding pieces within the state of Missouri. It does recognize that we have essentially a geographic cap in our charter school law. We do not have statewide charter school authorization at this point in the state. So that part is, that part we address just up front. Here's how we do charter schools in the state of Missouri. And then we also talk a little bit about the innovative schools that innovative public school models that some of our districts have worked together or have developed on their own. So it is a different looking application. It's more honed. It's more focused on just some really simple, straightforward strategies that we have that we can implement within the state.
Well, to I guess use a phrase that seems appropriate here, it sounds like you guys went to school on the results of the first application.
We actually did a lot of analysis. There was independent analysis that was done. We did a lot of internal analysis to determine just where could we make up points, where did we have deficits. And we did actually work with the governor's office and some legislative leaders to have some conversations around just, you know, here are the things that, you know, are going to be sources of challenge in the application. But it was a really worthwhile process for us because it really helped hone our thoughts and our planning around where we go with some of these large issues that are coming to the forefront in education.
How much money are we hoping to get?
Our application is looking. We are asking for $222,000. Excuse me. Let me try that again. $222 million, which is they restricted us to a range. If I remember correctly, our range was $150 to $250 million over a 4-year period. So we kind of hit, you know, just kind of in the middle of that range that they provided for us. They are restricting in round two the range for states, the request from states.
I can't think of anything in particular that the legislature did this year that would be of help in this application. Did you get anything from the legislature that helped you in any way with this program?
I think some of the bills that were introduced, there were ideas floated around. There were conversations I had that really helped us determine where we needed to go and what were viable reform initiatives that we could work with within the state, and how to approach some of the more difficult and challenging issues, which really to be. It focuses in that Section D around the great teachers and leaders. And those are really, discussions that really haven't taken place within the state. And so it became apparent just in conversations with lots of stakeholders that we needed to take our time, have conversations with lots of folks, and that that really a grassroots discussion needed to happen around how we would deal with and develop, update our teacher standards, evaluation models, measure teacher and leader effect using student level data, etc.
Did the failure of the merger legislation with you folks in higher ed have any impact on your application or anything that you wanted to put forth but couldn't because of that?
No.
Okay.
We have a great working relationship with the Department of Higher Ed.
Yeah. Well, when I heard you say P20, I knew immediately that you were. You guys were at least speaking the same language. If we get our $220 million, as for example, if I'm a parent of a student in Jefferson City or in Cape Girardeau or Carthage or Kirksville or wherever, will I be able to notice anything within, say, a year in a difference in the way that our schools operate in our towns?
For those districts that are participating, I think you will see a difference in the data being provided back through a state portal. That will be one of the first pieces that will launch relatively quickly. Is the data portal student and parent access to student level data? You'll also begin to notice. More data around what are called interim or benchmark assessments, which are assessments that monitor the progress of kids to the grade level expectation or the course expectation throughout the year. So you would begin to see that sort of data coming. What we had what has been found across the nation and across the state in districts that begin using benchmark reporting benchmark data and using it, and where parents can see it, there, and teachers are getting it, there tends to be a lot of changes going on how teachers become much more cognizant and parents of the progress or lack of progress of students towards meeting the goals for that grade level and attaining that content knowledge.
Let me ask you about the braided system of support that, as I understand it, targets the lowest 5% of the school buildings in the state in terms of how they're achieving. Tell me a little bit more about how you'll bring all of these forces to bear on that problem and what you hope the result will be.
Well, our result is to help really... Just take a moment and collect my thoughts so I say it the correct
sure.
way.
Oh, yeah, sure.
It's a nice thing about being recorded. The idea is that there are a lot of community supports, and in our school, in our high-need schools, there are resources out there within the community that, when braided together with the resources of the school and the school district, can provide a lot of supports for kids and parents and families that will help the kids reach their educational potential and increase their abilities to gain knowledge. So we're looking, the idea is, you know, we have kids, let's say we have students that are in the juvenile system. If we can merge the education services provided that are being provided in the juvenile system, if they have access in the juvenile system to the records of the kids, where the kids are in their education program, and know where the strengths and weaknesses are of are the kids, it actually, there's a huge lag time. My experience when I was in a school district, sometimes we kids would go into the juvenile system. We would know they were in the juvenile system. We wouldn't get a request for, and this isn't a criticism, it's just the way things work. We wouldn't necessarily get a request for books, work, records for a week or two. It takes a while, you know, and so that time is all precious educational time left for those kids. They may be in trouble, they might have issues, but it doesn't mean that we can't work on this. There's been a lot of work done in the P20 realm as far as linking all of this at the state level, all this data. But the piece that we would put more emphasis on and be able to fully develop with the resources of Race to the Top is at the district level to give more support to bring all those community resources together. That wasn't coherent. I'll try it a different way.
No, basically, we have a multitude of problems that get in the way of their learning, and so by focusing all of these diverse resources on the schools that have the poorest records, you hope that you're going to be able to improve the quality of education the students get, as well as the capability of the students to get the education that they're offered.
Correct.
Is that the easiest way to boil that down?
That's the easiest way. You did a good job of boiling it down. It is a complex challenge, but if we can bring these different resources together, it can really help, because there are different programs that are out there to support kids and families, but many times they tend to work in silos, and they don't communicate real well. And so the idea is, let's break the barriers down between these different programs, and let's bring together the resources to help the kids and their families. So if the kids actually, we can talk about the education of the kids, and we can get them the best possible education.
You talked about improving teaching standards and how to measure effect. Give me some examples of what you're talking about.
Well, teaching standards basically are professional standards and educator leader standards. They're essentially professional standards, just like there are professional standards for lots of other careers, doctors, dentists, lawyers, et cetera, CPAs. So our goal is to update and develop, fully flush out standards. Once we have those standards, just like when we have content standards around mathematics or social studies. It gives us it gives us a list of what do we value in the teaching and the educator leader professions. And then we can hone in on, okay, well, then our evaluation of that needs to be there. Our preparation needs to address those things. The measuring of teacher and leader effect is generally, that's one of the, we have a working group that's been working on that, because it's, a lot of folks will say, well, it's just student test scores. But unfortunately, we don't test currently fine arts or health PE at the state level. So we have to look at what are other indicators of the effectiveness of teachers, and then like building principals, district superintendents, et cetera, on what are measures of their effectiveness that we can say is resulting in or not resulting in improved student performance and achievement. So it's really looking at those things. There is our working group. We've had a working group that's been working on it. They have focused on primarily at this point growth models, and they've looked at basically of two different types of growth models, probably really too complex maybe possibly for a explanation over the radio possibly, but it's basically looking at the effect student percentiles and this, and then at growth student are value added by the teacher. So from the beginning, when a teacher comes in contact with a kid, how much did that student grow while in contact with the teacher, as measured by a state assessment or a standardized assessment of some sort? So we're looking effective at the federal level as being defined as attaining at least 1 year's worth of growth. Highly effective is being defined as attaining a year and a half of growth. So if a teacher is able to take a majority of their kids and get them to all reach the content that's expected at the end of the school year for a fourth grader, for example, then that would be considered to be effective. If they can get them past that, that would be considered highly effective. Or where the real nuance is here, let's say I'm a student that comes in, and I'm coming into third grade, but I'm reading at the second grade, fifth month level. If my teacher is able to take me to at the end of third grade to that I'm reading at the fourth grade level, that teacher has been highly effective with me. I have made up lost time.
If we get this money from this program, will the state's current problems in funding education and so many other things have any impact on what you're going to be able to institute if you get this kind of grant?
This money will assist those participating school districts and the department in implementing some of our large educational reform goals. So, yes, in many ways, it will help us through these difficult financial times.
But it's not going to be the shovel that digs you out of the hole entirely.
Oh no, it will. No, the grant funding, that $222 million would be over a 4-year period. So we are not looking at an influx of $222 million at one time, but it will be divided equally over those 4 years, essentially. So it will help us with one of the reasons we went with the approach we did with fewer things that are the most important educational reform pieces that we need to do within the state. Was we have to, you know, we were looking at this, what are the things that we feel like we have to get done. This money won't help with the transportation or with the foundation formula. It won't plug those kind of holes. It will just help us with some really targeted reform initiatives in our participating school districts.
What kind of a buy-in will you have to see at the local level in terms of parents and teachers' organizations, or just parental involvement? Will there be an investment that folks have to make at the local level who are outside of the actual education community?
There is, as far as the teachers' organizations for the participating school districts, there were opportunities for the teachers' organizations to express their support or to choose not to sign on with support. The real involvement will be at that braided system and in the data training that will happen. And the implementation of the model curriculum. Those will be the places where parents and teachers, well, the parents will especially see the most work and the most involvement. And then also across the state addressing this whole issue around the great teachers and leaders piece will be a statewide initiative.
When do you expect to hear back how you did?
We are supposed to hear in September.
Okay.
Early September is what they're telling us currently.
Did you get a chance to look at what the states that received grants the first time around, there were only a couple, did you get a chance to look at what they said they were going to do, and did that provide you with any instruction on how you could tailor your second application in this process?
We looked very closely at the Delaware and Tennessee applications to see how did they phrase or how did they present themselves as states and their initiatives. And we used what we learned from that as the basis for our round two application. One thing we found was that they had done a very effective job of telling their story, the story of Delaware, the story of Tennessee. They had done a really, really effective job of just kind of giving that historical setting for why could they handle educational reform in their states. They also had they both had different strengths as far as pieces that they were very strong in, but the one thing we found was they had very well-developed plans across the entire application, and those plans worked together. So what was happening in the standards adoption and the assessment development piece in Section B was coordinated with what was happening in Section C and Section D and referred to. So we really worked hard to try to coordinate our plans and our timelines across the whole application so that it was a unified package.
How badly do we need this grant?
It'd be really nice to have this grant. It would help us move education forward in the state at as far as our reform initiatives. It would really help us. I mean, it would be a great thing for us to be awarded the grant. It would be a lot of work to implement, but it will give us resources that we need to implement some key reform pieces that will help the education of our kids.
Okay. Well, we'll look for something in September, and we'll keep our fingers crossed for you. How confident do you feel?
Well, you know, they told us that the second round is a new round. I'll be honest and say there have not been applications from other states really floating out ahead of time like there were last time. So we've not really been able to look at what other states are how they're presenting themselves in round two. I think the competition is probably going to be strong. I think all the states have tried to put their best foot forward and have learned from the first round of applications and what was valued by the peer reviewers. We know we have some sources of challenge in the scoring just around some of the expectations around charter schools and pay for performance that we do not have in effect right now in the state, but we're hoping that our well-developed plans will make up for that, because we found that a well-thought-out plan in round two was valued. And that coordination was valued. So we're hoping that we can, that we'll be able to make up gain some points in several of those sections where we didn't quite do as well as we had hoped to last time.
Just a couple of things I want to ask you about. We talked about charter schools a couple of times here. Does this plan or the ideas that you put forth indicate any kind of an expansion of the charter school system in Missouri outside of St. Louis and Kansas City?
We just refer to a piece of legislation that was filed in this past legislative session, but we do not put forth a initiative to expand charter schools beyond what we currently have.
We were talking about this at church the other day, and the reason I asked is because some people were asking whether charter schools have proven that they are a viable and useful part of our education system, except for a few specific exceptions. It seems to me that they're just kind of puttering right along.
You know, the data pretty much, the Joint Committee on Education had completed a nice charter school review, and I would say the data pretty much speaks for itself that just as in good functioning, the characteristics of a good functioning school are the same whether it's a charter school or it's a traditional public school district. You know, it appears that leadership is key, involvement of parents is key, monitoring of instruction is key, and monitoring of student performance is key. So those characteristics are pretty much parallel, and that would be a true statement that we've got some very good charter schools, and we've got some charter schools that are not doing so well.
And the final thing is, even we naturally want to hope that things turn out well with this exercise, but even if we don't get some of this money again, the mere fact that you've had to go through this exercise twice, I would think, would have had great benefit to the department and to the future of education in Missouri generally.
Really, in all honesty, you're correct. We have this exercise, going through it twice, the second time especially, has really honed our educational reform plan and stripped it down to where the most important pieces that we need to go forward with in the state of Missouri. If we don't get the funding, that doesn't mean we're not going to continue to work on these key activities that we do need to address within the state. They just may not happen as fast, and we're continuing to watch for other grant opportunities to help with specific pieces of our educational reform plan, but we will continue to move forward. It may not move as fast as what we would hope, given some funding to help us move it along.
Yeah, but at least it gives you some targets out there.
But goals. It pretty much has laid out a good vision, we've had to think through what are all the processes that we need to have in place, and what would happen first, second, third, et cetera, in order to get movement on these issues. So it has really helped us, really honing our plan. Yeah. So it's been a valuable exercise for us.